Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Let's get down to business. I'm 26 years old, female, and I've had an outbreak of adult acne on my face. I only had it on my back in my teens, and now it's on my face. It's more distressing. It's primarily across the forehead, but I get bad, extremely sore, isolated lumps on my chin as well. I've tried various creams given by the doctor and the chemist, and nothing is working. I've been on Yasmin for 4 years, so I don't think it's a change in hormone levels. Why is this happening, and what can I do about it? I have a very clean diet. I do not drink, and I exercise daily. What am I doing wrong?
Adult acne is quite common in Ireland, and the term we use is acne rosacea. So it's slightly different to the adolescent acne, which is often, you know, a hormone change. So Yasmin is a form of contraceptive pill that reduces testosterone, which can be quite effective for adolescent acne. Rosacea is different. Rosacea can run in families. You tend to get spots in what we call the T-zone. So across the forehead, down the nose, into the chin, you get redness. You can get the little broken veins on the face. There are some things that trigger it. And interesting, said she doesn't drink because alcohol is a big trigger for a lot of people. Stress can be a big trigger for a lot of people. There are prescription creams, and sometimes we give prescription antibiotics that can work quite well for rosacea. Laser treatment can work quite well for the red veins. So it sounds like go along and chat to your doctor, and they can add something in. Probably you won't stop the Yasmin, but they'll probably add something in that might help as well.
Okay, fix along. You know, because bad skin can affect your confidence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't want to meet your pals down the pub. You don't particularly want to go to the shop because you just feel like crap, you know?
No, I say to parents all the time, they come in with kids who have, or teenagers who have acne, and a lot of the parents are like, oh, they'll grow out of it, you know, because often we often start with creams and lotions. But when they're not working, we're talking about antibiotics. And for, you know, more serious forms of acne, we often refer to a dermatologist for a drug called Roaccutane. And Roaccutane got really bad press because a number of years ago there were 3 people taking it who committed suicide, who died by suicide. And obviously that was extremely sad. And GPs used to be allowed to prescribe it, and they then stopped it. It can only be prescribed by dermatologists. But I always say, don't underestimate the effect that acne and changes in your skin can have on a person's confidence. And then you're getting scarring, which is not treatable. You know, it's very hard to treat scarring. So I always kind of raise the issue early of going in with more aggressive treatment. And I have seen far more people take the likes of Roaccutane and be delighted with the outcome. I haven't had a single patient that I've seen feel anyways depressed or unwell on it. So I think there are treatment options there. You know, even for rosacea, if the acne is very bad, they would sometimes prescribe something like Roaccutane for the acne part of it. So just, I always say, go to your doctor. And parents, don't turn to your kids and say, oh, spots are a normal part of growing up, you'll grow out of it. Because the odd spot, fine. But if you actually have spots,
clusters and
that are causing scarring, you're better off going in early and treating it. And I would regularly raise it with teenagers who come in, and they always want it treated. It's the parents who are setting back.
So how do you referee that battle in a consultation between a parent with strong views and a teenager whose nerves are gone?
Well, you have to referee it. Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
in
the end of the day, if the child is under 16, the parents have the final say.
Of course,
if they're over 16, the child ultimately can consent to their own medical treatment. But I would always involve parents in any decisions. I think parents are often worried about the treatment. Like an awful lot of mothers, we would suggest the contraceptive pill for a lot of girls with acne, and a lot of mothers are just terrified. You know,
they associate it with only one thing. Yeah.
They think that because their daughter's on the pill that she's going to go out having sex all the time. And to be honest, you know, I don't think being on the pill is going to make your daughter go out and have lots of partners. I think having, you know, decent advice at home and self-respect and that is going to make you much more likely to be, you know, judicious in your choice of partners. But I think it's an important conversation to have, and the pill can work very well for some people. So I always say to parents, look, I'm not jumping to this, but this is a possible treatment that will work very well. And again, people are worried about the pill because they hear about breast cancer and that, but the pill is one of the most studied medicines in the world. We know more about it than any others because of what it was. And there are many benefits to being on the pill as well. So if you choose carefully in conjunction with your doctor, you know, and they look at you as a person. I was interested, the girl you had in saying there are no doctors that look at your whole body. That's what GPs are. We are the only doctors in medicine who are trained to look at your entire body, mind and physical. So your GP is a really good source of information for these kind of things. Go along, talk to them. But obviously it's a sharing of information, and, you know, people have to be happy with the decision that's made.
So why has the medical fraternity and sorority not rushed to embrace ME as a serious medical illness, and they seem to feel that it's really not something that they can put a finger on or a label on necessarily, and certainly nothing they can medicate?
I think a lot of those who suffer with ME think that we are writing them off because we say, we suggest different treatments, or we say, you know, we don't have a treatment for this particularly. But the point I always try and make is there are lots of conditions that we don't have just one treatment that works. For most chronic medical diseases, we don't just recommend one thing. We recommend a number of things. Mm. And we are always evolving our treatment. We look at evidence. Doctors have to do so many hours of CME a year. We are taught to constantly update our skills. Unfortunately, it's not the medical community saying it doesn't exist. There isn't strong evidence out there, and there have been lots of studies done to say that we can identify this condition and that this is the treatment that works. And it is a different condition in different people. So as she said earlier, I think there are some people with mild, moderate, severe symptoms. And I do empathise with their feelings. Their symptoms are totally real. I had glandular fever when I was a teenager. I had some, you know, strong fatigue for a number of months after. But when I look back, I also realised I had moved back from the USA, gone from an American high school to an all-nun, you know, an all-girls boarding school. And the girls were lovely there, really, really nice people. But boarding school did not suit me. And when I look back, my mood was probably not great either. I was under stress. So I think there are psychological and physical conditions that come together. And I think we cannot treat one without treating the other. So it is really important that you address the person as a whole. And I totally agree with what she was saying when she came in, that they need to be looked at as a whole. But in looking at someone as a whole, you need to address the symptoms. And there are a number of different symptoms. And she had thyroid issues, which needed to be addressed. Obviously, she said herself she had some stress and fatigue issues that needed to be addressed. And there are different treatments work for different things. So people come into me with those symptoms. I absolutely agree their symptoms are real, and I would never deny that the fatigue is real, that the aches and pains are real, that the inability to motivate yourself to get out of your chair is real. And people with depression, you know, we always say, you can't say get up out of your chair and walk. So when you are feeling really unwell in yourself, you can't motivate yourself to do it. But there are a number of things that can help in each of those steps. And I certainly believe that psychological therapies are an extremely important part of the treatment. I also believe that looking at their nutrition, I always say about nourishing themselves, because our diets aren't always great. There are lots of micronutrients that we can't necessarily check for on blood tests that people may not be getting. So if you're not eating a broad, varied diet, you know, I would always say to someone, look, maybe taking a general multivitamin so you're getting your extra micronutrients can help. But different things work for different people. And I, one thing she did say that I would absolutely agree with, she talked about pacing yourself, and really what she was describing was mindfulness. And I'm a huge believer in mindfulness, and it's about living in today and accepting how you are today. So if today is a bad day and you're really tired, today's a bad day and you're really tired, but it doesn't mean that tomorrow will be a bad day and you're really tired. And I think I would refer people with all kinds of chronic conditions for mindfulness training, and I think the majority of them find it really helpful. It's about an acceptance of your limitations, an acceptance of who you are and how you are, and learning to live with that.
I think up until about 1988, ME was probably called taken to the bed.
Or the yuppie flu, I think she did mention it was that, called
Aoife
that.
Did, yeah. Yeah. Ryan, would Nina give a 15-year-old Valium, terrified of flying? Siobhan wants to know.
Okay. Valium and drugs like that get a lot of bad press for good reason, because they have been overprescribed and abused for many, many years. They are actually good drugs for certain things, and they are very good drugs for the acute treatment of extreme anxiety. For instance, if you are terrified of flying, if you are terrified of going to the dentist, if you're going for a medical procedure that scares you, that is the appropriate use of those drugs. So, you know, I do prescribe the likes of Valium for people who are afraid of flying. And in fact, I would tend to prescribe Valium more than other ones, like Alprazolam or Xanax would be one people know, which is kicks in faster, wears off quicker, but you get that kind of instant calm and then it wears off quickly and you feel anxious. Valium kicks in a little bit slower, wears off a bit slower, so you get more of a steady state of feeling calm. My concern would be in a 15-year-old, as GPs were not really allowed to prescribe drugs like that to people under the age of 18. If someone of 15 is really absolutely terrified of flying, it could be an appropriate drug. But I would also say at that stage, maybe exploring other options like anxiety management in general, you know, going along for some kind of cognitive behavioural therapy about addressing anxiety would also be important. So again, with any psychological condition, I would never just say drugs are the solution. There are many other things that can help as well.
In and around it. Okay. Are you a good flyer? You're a good flyer.
I am, but my husband is terrified of flying.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
And it's a very real fear. Yeah. Like he's just agitated the day before he goes. And I have prescribed him Valium to get on a flight.
Now,
he's got a lot better, but he's genuine. And we joke, you know, you've met Dean. He's quite dark and he looks kind of foreign. And he's so shifty in airports that we get pulled across at security every single time.
Get away.
They checked him for gunpowder residue in Atlanta.
You're joking.
You know, they haul him out every time. And, you know, he grows a beard quite quickly. So he just, he like, if we've been abroad, he looks That's really foreign. So and then they, his last name's Murphy. They never believe that. Do you know? So he, yeah.
He gets a tan instantly. He's shifty looking around going, I don't
so
want to fly.
Because he's so terrified.
So they immediately start going, okay, there's
dodgy.
They're
profiling dodgy. Him.
They're profiling.
Yeah.
They probably know him in every airport he's ever been through.
Every single time we fly. He's kind of taken off the belt now and stuff as he's walking up because he knows he's going to get
frisked. He knows he's going to be, just you might as well spend your time. Isn't that funny? I mean, the amount of incredibly bright people I know who get antsy and anxious days, if not weeks before. And then the flight itself, you might as well be sending down the Green Mile.
He's actually okay once we're up in the air.
Is that
but
right?
It's the day before. You can see it like 2 days before we fly and through the airport and then kind of taking off. And then once we're kind of up in the air, he's sort of okay.
Yeah, you're on the bus then. And then
you know,
coming
landing, he doesn't like landing.
Yeah, the 10-minute rule and all that.
But, I love flying. I love everything about it. And thankfully my children, you know, have got that. Like they get excited driving to the airport. I just love the whole experience.
I know what you mean, especially when you're with the gang and it's all a bit of an adventure then, isn't it? I even like the little meals.
I'm kind of weird.
I like the little meals. Okay, now moving on.
Yeah.
There'll be no flights soon enough anyway. Tonsils. I have a question. My little girl is 3.5 and has enlarged tonsils since birth and suffers from 3 or 4 cases of strep throat every year. So she seems to constantly have a little thing going on there. What do you think?
Yeah, we would say, you know, they used to whip everybody's tonsils out. I think a lot of people our age had their tonsils out.
Yes.
Nowadays, they don't rush in and do that as quickly. But if you are having sort of more than 4 cases of strep throat, which is a bacterial throat infection a year, particularly once they come to school age and they're missing school, that is when the doctors would consider taking tonsils out. We can kind of grow into our tonsils. So a lot of toddlers will have really big tonsils, but as they get bigger, the tonsils don't. And eventually they kind of equalize. But if they're really enlarged, if it's actually causing some kind of obstruction, so for uvula, which is the little kind of dangly bit when you look in at the back of your mouth, if that's sort of getting affected and sticking to a tonsil, I would ask your GP to refer you to an ear, nose and throat doctor. They may well consider taking her tonsils out.
Yeah, they're a curse, the tonsils, if they're a recurrent thing.
Those who have problems
child.
With their tonsils tend to have problems
I know
with their
from
tonsils.
Home. Yeah, no, it's not. It's a pain in the neck. Literally. that came out that way. Literally. Okay, we'll take one more, which is about deep vein thrombosis. I had it following the birth of my last baby, wanting to go for another baby, but unsure if it's safe or not. I've been to St. James's. They said it was pregnancy related. So does that mean yes or no to more babies?
It's not that they would say don't become pregnant again, but a pregnancy should be planned and you should talk to the haematologist because they would often put you on heparin through the pregnancy, which is to stop you getting another clot, their injections. So say she probably would have taken tablets such as warfarin or that when she had the clot, but obviously you can't use that if you're pregnant. So it really just depends on how far, like, if it was a big problem, if they think genuinely the hormone change in pregnancy was the cause, then it's quite likely they'll want her on something if she's pregnant again. And obviously, I presume they did all the tests to rule out any other clotting disorders or bleeding problems. So a pregnancy should be planned, but there are plenty of women who've had a clot who would go on and have more babies.
Okay, that's where we'll leave it for today. Nina Burns, thanks so much for coming. We'll see you in a couple of weeks, unless you're heading for the hills.
I think I'm in one more. I think you and I are sort of off at the same time, so I'm back into it, I think, one more time before you go on your holidays, I think.
Sounds good. Jackie just texted to say, I have to laugh about your husband, Nina. I always get pulled in at airports as well. I even had my hair searched in Paris. Big head of curly hair. My kids nearly died laughing. I must be a dodgy looking bird. Says Jackie. You are a dodgy looking bird, Jackie. If they're checking your hair for a nest or something.
I suppose Dean doesn't have that problem, as he would be follically challenged in that area.
They have to check everywhere else. That's the problem.
He'll hate me for saying
that. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting cup of coffee later on. Thank you, Nina.